A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's got a friend who just signed a lease on an apartment in Israel with a parking space attached. The space is oddly generous in size. The friend's car is modest, and now the friend is eyeing all that extra square footage as potential storage. This is apparently becoming very common here, and Daniel sees it as a case study in what some call the Israeli successful method, pushing boundaries until someone pushes back. His question is, what are the most creative ways to store private assets in a parking space without attracting unwanted attention from building management?
I love this question. It's part engineering challenge, part social theater.
Part felony, depending on how creative we get.
Let's not jump straight to felony. Let's work our way up.
Start with misdemeanors. Escalate from there.
The first principle here is camouflage. Anything you store needs to look like it belongs in or near a car. The building manager does a walkthrough. Their brain needs to register car stuff and move on.
The Israeli building manager is a specific kind of adversary. They've seen everything. They have strong opinions about what a parking space should be, and they will enforce those opinions with a level of intensity that seems disproportionate until you realize enforcement is basically their hobby.
So you can't just stack boxes in the corner and throw a tarp over them. That's an invitation. That's basically ringing a dinner bell for a sternly worded note taped to your windshield.
Dear resident, the parking area is not a storage facility. Please remove your belongings within 48 hours. Signed, the Va'ad Bayit. Typed in a font that somehow conveys disappointment.
What's the first tier? The entry-level storage solution?
I think it's the trunk. Obvious, but underrated. If your car lives in that spot permanently, and you're not driving it daily, the trunk becomes a climate-controlled vault that nobody questions.
Climate-controlled is generous for an Israeli summer, but yes. And you can extend this. Back seats fold down. A modest hatchback can hold an astonishing amount if you're not using it for passengers. But here's the thing. That's not really what the prompt is asking about. That's just using your car. The question is about the space around the car.
The negative space.
So let's talk about the first real move, the car cover.
The car cover. The buka of parking space shenanigans.
A high-quality fitted car cover is the foundational infrastructure for any parking space storage operation. It does two things. One, it signals that you're a fastidious car owner who cares deeply about paint protection. That buys you goodwill. Two, it creates a visual barrier. Nobody knows what's under there.
What's under there is a car, yes, but also the space between the car and the wall now has a privacy screen. You've created a little vestibule of deniability.
The key is to get a cover that goes all the way to the ground, not one of those half covers that just does the roof and windows. You want full-length, floor-skimming coverage. Now the perimeter of your parking space is a visual blind spot.
Here's where the Israeli-specific wisdom kicks in. You don't go from zero to warehouse overnight. You phase it in. Week 1, it's just the car cover. Week 2, maybe a small set of winter tires stacked neatly against the wall, also under a dark cover. Week 3, the tires are actually boxes, but nobody checked.
The salami slice method.
You normalize each increment before adding the next. By month 3, the building manager has accepted that this is just the car cover parking space. That's its identity now. And you exploit that settled expectation.
There's a psychological term for this. It's related to the mere exposure effect and habituation. Once something becomes part of the background, people stop scrutinizing it. The building manager's brain eventually stops seeing your parking space as a thing to inspect and starts seeing it as a fixed feature of the basement.
Like that one neighbor's door that's always had a weird mezuzah angle. You stopped noticing it years ago.
So now we've established the car cover as our base layer. What goes under it?
Let's think about what people actually need to store. Seasonal items are the classic. Sukkah panels, for instance. A sukkah is basically a flat-pack temporary structure. Panels, poles, the shock mat. It all breaks down into long, flat bundles that slide perfectly behind a car.
The timing works beautifully. You're storing it for 11 months, and during Sukkot, it's actually in use on your balcony, so the one time someone might notice it's gone, it's supposed to be gone.
Nobody's doing a parking space audit during Sukkot. They're busy.
Let's get more creative. The prompt asked for highly creative solutions, so let me propose something, the decoy car park collection.
I'm listening.
You go to a junkyard or you find someone selling used car parts online, a bumper, a door panel, a spare hood, and you lean them against the wall of your parking space. Maybe throw a greasy rag on top. Now the visual story is, this person works on their car. Everything in this space is car adjacent.
The boxes behind the bumper. Those are also car parts. They're new brake pads in unmarked cardboard.
Nobody is going to inspect a stack of car parts closely. It's the least appealing investigation target imaginable. Building manager sees a fender leaning against the wall and thinks, I don't want to have that conversation. I don't want to know about his transmission rebuild.
There's a related move here that I think is underutilized. The gym equipment Dodge. A kettlebell, a yoga mat, a foam roller. These are things that people might reasonably keep in a car. You're just, you know, a fitness person who's between workouts. And if the kettlebell is actually hollow and full of valuables, well, that's just good design.
Wait, hollow kettlebells? Is that a thing?
I'm saying it could be. I'm saying we're in the solutions business here.
But let me push on something. The real vulnerability in any parking storage operation isn't visual discovery. It's neighbor complaints. Israeli apartment buildings are dense social ecosystems. Someone is watching. Someone is always watching.
The retiree on the third floor, who knows every car's schedule.
So part of the strategy has to be social. You need to be friendly with the immediate parking neighbors. Not suspiciously friendly, just the normal nod, the occasional Shabbat Shalom, the casual acknowledgement that you exist and are a reasonable person.
If someone does ask about the storage, you need a boring answer ready, not a defensive answer, a boring one. Oh, we're renovating, just temporary. Or my mother-in-law is between apartments. Nobody questions mother-in-law storage. It's a universally accepted temporary condition.
The mother-in-law card is powerful. It's the diplomatic immunity of domestic clutter.
You can extend it. These are my in-laws' things. They're making Aliyah next year, just helping them out. Now you've invoked Zionism. Who's going to argue with Zionism in an Israeli parking garage?
You just discovered a new legal doctrine, storage by Aliyah proxy.
I'm not saying it would hold up in court. I'm saying it would hold up in the parking garage.
Let me introduce a concept I've been thinking about. The parking space as false wall. In a lot of Israeli underground parking garages, the spaces are delineated by pillars and walls. If your space is against a wall, you've got options. You build a shallow false wall, basically a plywood panel painted the same color as the actual wall that sits a foot and a half out from the real wall. Behind it, you've got a long, narrow storage cavity that's completely invisible.
The false wall just looks like part of the parking structure. If you paint it to match and don't get cute with it,
the key is matching the exact shade of institutional beige that every Israeli parking garage uses. That specific, soul-deadening beige that says built in the 90s, never repainted.
The beige of municipal compromise.
You get a paint mat from the hardware store, you build a simple frame, you attach the panel, and now you've got, depending on the width of the space, something like 15 to 20 square feet of hidden storage that's an inch and a half deep.
Wait, an inch and a half? What are you storing in an inch and a half?
I meant a foot and a half. A foot and a half. 18 inches deep. You can store luggage, plastic bins, folding chairs, camping equipment. Anything relatively flat.
Okay, that's more useful. I was picturing you sliding individual shekels into a slot like a piggy bank.
No, that's a different strategy. The coin slot storage system.
The false wall is the nuclear option. High effort, high reward, high risk if discovered. What's the low effort equivalent?
The roof box. If your parking space has sufficient ceiling clearance, and many Israeli underground garages have surprisingly high ceilings because they're also bomb shelters.
Right. Most parking garages in Israel double as shelters. That's a real architectural constraint that creates opportunity. High ceilings, thick walls, very solid construction.
So if you've got the vertical clearance, you install a roof box on your car, not a small one, the biggest Thule or Yakima box that will fit, and you never open it in the parking garage. You open it elsewhere if you need to. As far as anyone knows, it's empty. It's just aerodynamic overhead.
It's not empty. It's stuffed with, what, winter coats?
Pesek dishes are a perfect candidate. Used 2 weeks a year, take up enormous cabinet space the rest of the time. Storing them in a roof box above a car in a climate-controlled underground garage is genuinely practical.
It's above eye level. Nobody looks up in a parking garage. Everyone's looking at their phone or watching for cars backing out.
The vertical dimension is completely neglected in parking space strategy. Everyone thinks in square meters. Nobody thinks in cubic meters.
This is the real insight. The parking space is a volume, not an area. And the ceiling is free real estate. Can we talk about ceiling-mounted storage?
I was hoping you'd ask. So if you own the parking space, not rent it, own it. You've got more latitude. You can install overhead storage racks, the kind people use in garages in America. They bolt into the ceiling, they're rated for hundreds of pounds, and they sit above the car's roofline.
In a high-ceilinged bomb shelter garage, you've got clearance for days. You could store an entire second household above that Fiat.
The Fiat Punto with the full apartment's worth of overflow storage, suspended above it like a sword of Damocles made of plastic bins.
I want to talk about the aesthetic dimension here, because there's a fine line between resourceful storage and this person has a problem. And in Israel, that line is often visible from space.
The tell is when the storage becomes the primary use and the car becomes secondary. When you're parking at an angle because the boxes have claimed territory, that's when management intervenes.
You have to maintain the fiction that this is primarily a parking space that happens to have some things in it. The car must be centered. The storage must be peripheral. The proportions matter.
This is almost like set design. You're dressing a set called normal parking space, and the audience is a building manager who's seen every trick.
Let's talk about some unhinged ideas. Because the prompt asked for creative, and I think we've been too responsible so far.
I was wondering when we'd get here.
The hollow car. You buy a non-functioning vehicle. Something that doesn't run, costs basically nothing, is more rust than metal, and you tow it into the space. But you've gutted it. The interior is completely hollowed out. The door's still open. Inside, it's just shelving. The car is now a storage locker that happens to be shaped like a 1998 Subaru.
That's deranged. I love it. Does it need license plates?
If it's in a private parking space in a private garage, probably not. It's on private property. You'd need to check the specific building bylaws, but I think you could argue it's a vehicle under restoration.
A restoration that never progresses. It's been under restoration for 7 years. Parts are on order.
The parts are in the hollowed-out engine compartment, which is full of winter linens.
The hollow car is a strong entry, but I think we can go further. What about the fake construction project? You put up a few traffic cones, a roll of caution tape, and a handwritten sign in Hebrew that says Renovation in Progress, Temporary Storage. Maybe a hard hat hanging on a hook. Now your pile of boxes isn't a pile of boxes. It's construction materials and tools. It's temporary by definition.
The sign is doing a lot of work there. In Israel, a handwritten sign carries a weird kind of authority. If someone took the time to write it in block letters and laminate it, it must be official.
The laminated sign is the Israeli version of a wax seal. It commands respect.
Here's the problem with the construction ruse. It has an expiration date. After about 2 months, people start asking when the renovation will be done. You need a rotating cast of excuses. First it's plumbing, then it's electrical, then it's waiting for the inspector.
Waiting for the inspector buys you at least 6 months in this country.
You can stretch that to a year if you mention it's a government inspector.
Let me pivot to something slightly more grounded. The prompt mentioned this is becoming very common in Israel, and I think there's a reason for that beyond just space being at a premium. Israeli apartments are small, and storage is almost never adequate. New constructions in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, we're talking apartments of 80, 90 square meters. Closets are an afterthought.
Nobody has a basement. The American solution of throw it in the basement doesn't exist here. The parking space is the basement.
So this isn't just people being sneaky. It's a rational response to a genuine infrastructure gap. The demand for storage exists, the supply doesn't, so the market innovates.
The market being people with large parking spaces and low scruples.
I prefer high adaptability.
Same thing, different branding.
Let's talk about the parking space as a business opportunity, because if you've got a large space, you could be storing other people's things.
Now we're in the sharing economy. Peer-to-peer parking space storage. There's probably an app for that.
But those are above board. They're for people who own storage space legitimately. What we're discussing is the gray market version. Your neighbor on the fourth floor needs to store a kayak. You've got room behind your car. 50 shekels a month, no questions asked.
The kayak is a great test case because it's awkwardly shaped, hard to store in an apartment, and entirely plausible in a parking context. Oh, I kayak the Sea of Galilee. You know how it is.
Do you kayak?
I'm a sloth. I don't even swim. But the building manager doesn't know that.
The building manager thinks you're outdoorsy. That's part of your cover identity now. Car guy, kayaker, temporarily storing his mother-in-law's belongings during her Aliyah process.
I contain multitudes.
Let me introduce another concept. The modular storage system disguised as parking infrastructure.
I like where this is going.
You know those metal bollards or posts that sometimes delineate parking spaces? The ones that fold down? What if one of them wasn't a bollard? What if it was a narrow, vertical, lockable storage tube that looked exactly like a parking bollard when closed? You could store documents, small valuables, emergency cash, whatever. Completely invisible because it reads as parking hardware.
This is spycraft. You've invented the dead drop parking bollard.
I'm saying the form factor exists. I'm not saying it's commercially available. But this is the kind of bespoke solution that a motivated individual could commission from a metalworker.
Commission from a metalworker is doing a lot of work there. You'd need to find a metalworker who doesn't ask questions.
Israel has no shortage of metalworkers who don't ask questions. Let's step back and think about the risk calculus here. What actually happens if building management discovers your storage operation? In most cases, it's not a legal issue, it's a contractual one. You're violating the lease terms or the building bylaws. The remedy is usually a warning, then a fine, then potentially a demand to remove the items.
In practice, most building management committees don't want a confrontation. They want compliance with minimal friction. So, if you're not blocking anyone, not creating a fire hazard, and not making the garage look like a junkyard, they'll often look the other way.
The fire hazard point is important, actually. A lot of Israeli parking garages have strict fire codes, and for good reason. You can't store flammable materials. No propane tanks, no gasoline canisters, nothing that could accelerate a fire.
The apocalypse prepper fuel cache is out.
And honestly, that's a line I wouldn't cross even if you could. The safety concern is real. Underground fires in enclosed spaces are catastrophic.
We're here for creative storage, not creative ways to immolate your neighbors.
So within the bounds of non-hazardous storage, what other creative options do we have?
I've been thinking about the bike rack gambit. You install a heavy-duty bike rack on the wall of your parking space, the kind that holds multiple bikes vertically. But instead of bikes, you hang custom bags that look like bike-shaped covers. Each bike is actually a storage bag.
You're creating bike-shaped piñatas full of your belongings.
From a distance, it reads as a bike enthusiast setup. Up close, it's your off-season wardrobe in nylon shells.
The downside is that bikes are theft targets. You might attract the wrong kind of attention.
That's why you use visibly cheap bike covers, the ones that are faded and slightly torn. Nothing says, not worth stealing, like a bike cover that looks like it survived the Six-Day War.
The aesthetic of strategic neglect. It's a recurring theme in our storage strategies.
Strategic neglect is the unifying theory of this entire episode. Everything should look slightly too boring to investigate.
Let's talk about one more approach, and then we should probably address the philosophical question underneath the prompt. The approach, the locked cabinet on wheels. You get a tall, narrow metal storage cabinet, the kind used in offices or workshops, and you put it on heavy-duty casters. It sits against the wall of your parking space. When you need to park, you roll it flush against the wall. When you need access, you roll it out. It's mobile, it's lockable, and it looks like it belongs in a utility area.
The key is that it's clearly a cabinet, not a pile of boxes. Cabinets are dignified. Boxes are suspicious. A cabinet says, I have organizational systems. Boxes say, I have problems.
The cabinet also has the advantage of being a single object. Building management sees one cabinet, they think, okay, storage cabinet. They see 7 mismatched boxes and a suitcase. They think, what is happening here?
Object count matters. The fewer distinct items, the more legitimate it looks.
A single large object reads as intentional. A scatter of small objects reads as clutter. And clutter invites intervention.
To synthesize what we've covered so far, the car cover creates privacy. The false wall creates hidden volume. The roof box exploits vertical space. The hollow car is the nuclear option, and strategic neglect is the aesthetic that ties it all together.
The social dimension. Be friendly, have boring explanations ready, phase things in gradually.
Now, the prompt frames this as an example of the Israeli successful method, pushing boundaries until someone pushes back. And I think that's worth unpacking a bit.
The phrase, in Hebrew, is often rendered as something like Shitat HaMatzliach, the method of the successful person or the method that works. It's not exactly a formal concept, it's more of a cultural observation.
The idea being that, in Israeli society, rules are often treated as the opening bid in a negotiation rather than as fixed boundaries. You try something, you see what happens, and you adjust based on the response.
This isn't unique to Israel, but it's particularly pronounced here. There's a whole academic literature on this. Some researchers call it informal institutional adjustment. The idea is that in environments where formal institutions are rigid or slow, people develop informal workarounds, and those workarounds eventually become normalized.
The parking space storage thing is a perfect microcosm. The formal system says parking spaces are for cars. The informal system says parking spaces are for cars plus whatever you can reasonably fit. The boundary between reasonable and unreasonable is negotiated case by case, building by building.
That negotiation is what makes it interesting. It's not lawless. It's a parallel system of norms that evolves through precedent. If the guy in Space 12 has had a storage cabinet for 3 years and nobody's complained, that becomes a tacit precedent for the woman in Space 17 who wants to add a roof box.
Precedent-based storage rights. It's common law, but for parking garages.
And the building manager is basically a judge in this system, but a reluctant one. They don't want to set precedents by enforcing too strictly or too loosely.
There's a real tension here, though, that I think is worth acknowledging. When does this cross from resourceful to antisocial? Because at some point, if everyone treats their parking space as a storage unit, the garage stops functioning as a garage. It becomes a basement with cars in it.
That's the tragedy of the commons angle. Individual optimization leads to collective degradation. If everyone stores their sukkah and their Pesach dishes and their kayak and their hollowed-out Subaru, eventually the garage is just a chaotic underground flea market.
Someone's going to be the person who ruins it for everyone. There's always one. The person who stores a couch, a full-size couch, in their parking space, next to their car. And suddenly, management sends out an all-building email, and the golden age of permissive storage is over.
The couch is the line. We can all agree on that.
The couch is absolutely the line. If you're storing upholstered furniture in your parking space, you've lost the plot. You're not being resourceful, you're being a problem.
Unless the couch is inside the hollow car. Then it's just car interior.
That's a loophole I'm willing to consider.
Let me raise one more serious point, and then we can wrap. There's an insurance dimension to this that I think people overlook. If you're storing valuables in a parking space and they're damaged or stolen, your standard renter's or homeowner's insurance may not cover them. Parking areas are often excluded or have limited coverage.
If the storage itself causes damage, say your overhead rack collapses on someone's Mercedes, you're liable. Your creative storage solution just became a very expensive lesson.
The meta advice here is, store things you can afford to lose. Don't keep the family silverware above your fiat.
The family silverware goes in the hollow kettlebell. We've established this.
I forgot our own taxonomy.
To answer the prompt directly, creative ways to store assets in a parking space with minimal unwanted attention. R-tiered recommendations. Start with the car itself as storage. Add a full-length car cover. Exploit vertical space with a roof box or ceiling rack. Use the false wall if you own the space and want to invest effort. Maintain the visual fiction with strategic neglect and low object counts, and have your boring explanations ready.
The social playbook, phase in gradually, be friendly with neighbors, never block anyone, and for the love of everything, don't be the person who stores a couch.
Also, consider the holo car. I'm not saying it's practical, I'm saying it's an option on the table.
It's on the table. The table that's stored behind the false wall in your parking space.
Which is under the car cover, next to the kayak. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The mantis shrimp has 16 types of photoreceptor cones in its eyes. Humans have 3. If human color vision were measured on the same scale, a mantis shrimp could distinguish colors that would require a human to perceive roughly 1.2 billion distinct color channels, which, expressed in units familiar to the Portuguese-speaking fishermen of São Tomé and Príncipe, would be equivalent to differentiating the precise shade of every individual fish in a school of 10,000 sardines at a depth of 30 meters under tropical noon light.
No, right.
I'll never look at a sardine the same way.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. You can find show notes and more at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Don't store couches in your parking space.
Unless they're inside a hollow Subaru.
Then it's fine.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.